When they called me and asked me to step into this project, I died a little death because I thought I hated death of a salesman. It turns out that really what I have is post-traumatic Dustin Hoffman disorder when it comes to death of a salesman.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or MP3 player. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast number 398, Salesman Behind Bars. Last New Year's Eve, I put together a podcast that were the top 10 most downloaded episodes of the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast for 2013. The thing that surprised me on that list was that my conversation with Kate Powers about theater in prisons wasn't in the top 10, because that episode is the one I hear the most about from podcast listeners, either via email or from people who meet me at shows or on the street. They say, "I loved that episode about the theater in prison." It's definitely the most responded to episode I've ever done. And so I'm doing a sequel today with Kate Powers, again, talking about a different production and a different prison. But this sounded like this was maybe even cooler. You were doing that classic, that staple of the American theatrical canon, Death of a Salesman.
Yes, it was in Fishkill Correctional.
I'll say right out, I think I said it to you on Twitter as well, Death of a Salesman is, I know it's up there on the list, everybody's list, it's not one of my favorites by a long shot, but it sounds like what you did turned it into maybe one of my favorites.
You know, when I discovered that the play is much richer than my experience with it has ever been before, because fundamentally it's a play about a guy who has all the wrong dreams, right? And it's a guy whose definition of success has been drafted for him by other people. And he never learns to listen to himself and to trust what is true about himself to create his own definition of success. And that's every guy in prison, too. They're guys who at one point had all the wrong dreams. They're guys who for a long time were letting the guys in the hood or the guys in the gang define success for them. And they were striving to achieve that messed up version of success. So it resonated like crazy in there. And then the other thing that came up for the guys a lot was that even though the Lomans might be the epitome of the dysfunctional American family, for the men, the message that they heard was, it's family that's going to stick with you in the long run, no matter what. And they talked about the visiting room floor and how, you know, all those guys who say they're your brothers out on the street, none of them ever come to visit. And the girlfriends go away. And after you're in there for a while, the cousins go away. And the only people who keep showing up is your wife and your mom. You know, and so that thing of Linda eventually turning to the boys and saying, either you show up and you pay him the respect he deserves, or you're not to come see me anymore either, was very powerful for them.
Well, and there's something, I guess I get why Death of a Salesman is an important play, and I get the emotions of it behind it. I've never seen a production where I think I genuinely buy it. And it has something to do with, I don't know, the highly successful star slumming to play this sad sack, or the context of a usually upper middle class audience sitting there judging this man. Something about the context of these men performing this in prison suddenly makes this play vital and important and believable now to me.
Yeah, it was, you know, we do two performances that are just for the population of the facility. And then we did a third performance. And because Fishkill is a smaller, our program is smaller there. The prison's about the same size as Sing Sing, where I usually work. But the program's a little bit smaller. So we only have about 50 civilians who come in from the outside to watch a performance in there. And at Fishkill, they actually watch it side by side with about 100 men who are incarcerated there. And so that's a little funky because you've got 50 pretty much white people sitting on one side of the house. And then you had about 100 black and brown men, pretty much, and a couple puppies, because there's a program called Puppies Behind Bars at Fishkill also, which changes the temperature in the rehearsal room because there's always puppies around, learning to become service dogs through a program there. It's always fascinating to me to watch the plays with the civilian audience versus watching the plays with the incarcerated audience and what resonates in what ways with each group. And I think, you know, the guys felt so strongly what was going on with Willie. And the things that were funny to them that the civilian audience didn't laugh at, in terms of, you know, him negotiating against himself with his boss, right? I only need $65 a week, Howard. Actually, 50, you know, how about 40? Could you do 40? You know, and as he slowly loses and then regains his grip on, or his purchase on reality, different moments that resonated for them really powerfully. One thing that was really important to us was to make sure that we could understand, that the audience would understand that the character of Ben was a little bit magical, or was maybe not quite as grounded in reality as the rest of the characters in the play. And in a professional production where you've got, I don't know, a design team, you could write some light cues for him, right? Which would help signify that when Ben shows up, we're in an alternate place, right? But we were doing this in a room where the lights were just on. And so it was really important to me to find a way to make sure people understood about Ben. And so we did this through the only tool that I had available to me there, which was costume. So he had a suit that had a bright turquoise shirt and a bright turquoise tie and a really fly turquoise hat, right? So the minute he walked, and everybody else was a little bit muted and a little gray and, you know, just very beigey, kind of washed out, right? Everything in Willie's present was kind of washed out. And the flashbacks, the boys and Linda suddenly were wearing super saturated colors, and Ben was always in these super saturated colors. So after one of the performances, one of the guys in the audience turned to me and he said, "So that guy was all in his head, wasn't he?" Which, of course, was Arthur Miller's original title for the play, In His Head.
Really? In His Head? I did not know that.
Yeah, that's what it was originally called. And I said, "Yeah, exactly. He was in his head." And one of the other guys in the audience said about the woman in the hotel room that Willie flashes back to, he said, "She was his side piece, wasn't she?" And I never heard that phrase before, but as soon as I heard it, I knew what a side piece was. It's a piece on the side, right? The production process for this show was really uneven. It was really rough. You know, I mentioned we lost our Willie Loman partway through. We'd lost a Linda. We had trouble with the actor playing Biff stepping up and making the commitment. So the production was uneven. But when we met about a week after the performance to talk about it, the guy said, one of them said, he said, "You know, I came to prison as an adult. I was 34 years old when I was incarcerated." And that makes him unique in this group, because most of the guys in my program have grown up in prison. You know, they came to prison at 17 or 18 or 19. So this gentleman is unique in that he was much older. And he said, "This is the only time I feel normal, is when I come here and do this." And another one of the guys who was formerly in a maximum security facility, and because he's been a, you know, an exemplary prisoner, whatever that means, and because he's now closer to the end of his sentence, he's achieved medium status, right. And so he's now at this facility. And he said, I never understood before so clearly that it's not all about me. He said, "I know now that when I go home, I'm going to have to find a way to be of service." And he learned that through making a play.
Hi, I'm Brian Dennehy, and you're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Where can you RSC the RSC? Next weekend, we fly to Edinburgh, Scotland to perform the European premiere of The Complete History of Comedy Abridged at the Pleasance Theatre at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival from July 30th to August 25th. And in honor of the Pleasance's 30th birthday, we'll also be doing 9 performances of the show that started it all, The Complete Works of William Shakespeare Abridged Revised, from August 17th to the 25th. Hurry, hurry, please. We've already sold over 1,000 tickets for the comedy show alone. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReducedShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office venue and ticket information.
Something about thinking of your production made me remember something that my father always used to say to me, which was, well, you could, you know, because I always wanted to go into the theater, and he said, well, you can always be a salesman. You're great with people. You can great go sell. And I always thought, I don't want to sell people something they don't want. That's not what I want. And I only realize now, in thinking of connection of our conversation, that, you know, I don't want to be a salesman of other people's things. I want to be a creator of my own things. And I wonder if this play and your program generally speaks to the creative impulses in these guys.
Yeah, it certainly does. You know, most of these men never knew that they had creativity in them. Never, because they didn't get an art class or a music class or whatever it is. They never knew that they had these skills or these inclinations or these creative impulses within them. And it's tragic that they didn't figure that out until they were inside a prison, you know. We have it at Sing Sing. This year they started a modern dance class, and we have art classes at all 5 facilities where rehabilitation through the arts works. And actually there's a group of guys who were recently released from, they weren't released all in a batch, but over about a year-long period, a group of guys who had danced together inside Woodburn Correctional Facility had been released, and they've started their own dance company.
Oh, cool.
On the outside, called Figures in Flight.
Cool.
And so they've been, you know, starting to get some gigs around New York City. But so many of these guys, you know, the really finding their voices, really learning to speak with their true voices, as opposed to kind of the fronting, like, I gotta sound like a dude and I gotta, you know, fit in on the corner kind of stuff. Learning to be a little bit vulnerable sometimes, learning to really speak from their core as humans. I think that's maybe the best thing about this work, is that we get to facilitate and witness, as, you know, some guys who've had some very difficult times and who no doubt in some cases have inflicted difficulty on other people, discover that that's not all of who they are.
Well, and it sounds like you, speaking of dance, you incorporated some much needed comedy or levity, if not to the production, then at least to the rehearsals. Because I saw you mentioning on Facebook and Twitter about, since Willie Loman's sons are named Biff and Happy, you were incorporating some Pharrell Williams music.
Yeah, well, it was definitely in rehearsal. We didn't get to the production. But Happy, the guy, the actor who's playing Happy, who coincidentally played the lead role in Superior Donuts at Sing Sing 5 years ago, which was the first show that I directed inside. But now he's been transferred. So now he's got medium status and he's closer to release. So he was playing Happy. And so he and the actor who was playing Biff did a little dance, a little Loman Brothers dance, to Happy, and they rewrote some of the lyrics, and, you know, that became part of our warm up.
Right. Cool.
To do the Loman Happy dance. And then we worked on, we created what we called the Biff slap. Not the bitch slap, but the Biff slap.
Got it. Got it.
you know, 'cause there's 2 different moments in the play where Willie has to, Miller is explicit that Willie is physically violent with Biff, right? Mm-hmm. And so trying to craft each of those slaps so that they each was his own thing and was coming from its own place was part of the process. The guys are often, when you first come to them to start to work on stage violence, they laugh, they think, and I had a guy say once to me, he said, I never thought I would learn anything about violence from a female.
Clearly, he's never been married.
Oh, cynical. So, you know, teaching them some stage combat and getting them to think about violence in a different way, right? Yeah. You know, and I sort of paraphrase Fight Club a lot. I say the first rule of stage violence is that nobody gets hurt. You know, and what's the second rule of stage violence is that nobody gets hurt. Yeah. And that's a little foreign to them. And they kind of want to fake it and rough it out. And I'm like, no. Right. let's be safe. Now, let's make sure that we can all trust each other.
So you don't only direct productions in prisons. You direct,
no.
you direct, a serious, I'm doing that in air quotes, production, real in air quotes, productions of Shakespeare,
for instance.
Around the world. Would you do Shakespeare in a prison? Or?
I would do Shakespeare in a prison in a heartbeat. Yeah. I do a lot of Shakespeare's my sort of my home base. I direct
In fact, what is your Twitter handle?
It's Plain Kate.
Plain Kate. All right.
Yeah. Got it. And that's my website is plainkate.com. Mm-hmm. And I had somebody say to me a bunch of years ago at a theater company, he was actually called to ask me if I would direct Taming of the Shrew. And he said, well, do you like the play? And I had to laugh. And I said, well, did you look at my portfolio online?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right there.
I would love to work on that. I would love to work on Taming of the Shrew. I think it's a misunderstood play.
I do too. I would do Shakespeare in prison in a heartbeat because I think Shakespeare teaches us what it is to be human. That's the nature of this whole exercise. We're not trying to make actors with the plays inside. We're trying to help them understand themselves and one another and how they interact and how they can more effectively engage with the world than maybe they have up till now. And actually at Sing Sing, we're going to do Shakespeare in 2016. I'm also the co-chair of the Shakespeare Theater Association's 400 Dreams Committee. There's a huge set of initiatives that are going to happen for 2016, which is the 400th anniversary of Shakespeare's death. There's this whole series of events, and one of the things that we're trying to do is on April 23rd, 2016, we want to have Shakespeare around the globe. We want to have Shakespeare in every time zone around the planet. We're talking to NASA about having some Shakespeare spoken from the International Space Station on that day. So we're going to do some Shakespeare at Sing Sing so that those men can be part of this global event where we're celebrating, you know, and people can be doing full productions, people can be doing readings, they can be doing sonnet slams, they can be having birthday cake and singing to Will, and it's all good, you know. Whatever people want to do, schools, libraries, professional theaters, we're trying to get as many people involved in playing with Shakespeare as possible.
Am I right in thinking that you have finally brought life to this salesman?
I think so. I think that we did. Salesman turned out in prison. This play that you and I both aren't sure how much we like to begin with, even though it's such a seminal piece of American theater, right? It turns out that in prison, it's a story of hope because Biff ultimately does write his own definition of success, and he's not going to repeat Willie's mistakes. And in that environment, you know, breaking that generational cycle of disappointment is huge.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us your overrated or misunderstood plays via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also post comments on many of our website pages, and you can post reviews of this podcast on iTunes. You can also interact with other fans at our website and our Reduced Shakespeare Company Facebook fan page. You can also become a subscriber to our YouTube channel or become a twit. Follow us on Twitter @Reduced. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. Thanks, as always, to webmaster Matt Rippey, Born to Play Bernard Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and GarageBand. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Jackie Hewitt. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Brian Dennehy, who's a pretty good salesman himself, having won the Tony, the Joseph Jefferson, the Golden Globe, the Drama Desk, the Screen Actors Guild, and the Olivier Awards for his performance as Willie Loman. And thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 1194ths of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
Well, again, you know, this just, as we talked about last time, this just speaks to the value of theater and the value of the arts, full stop, in any situation and amongst any population.
Yeah.
This podcast is a production of the Reduce Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reduceshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.